This audio is brought to you by Business Radio, powered by Wharton.
Hello, welcome back. Actually, it's back in black, right? There we go. I'm Ken Smith, professor here at the Wharton School. You're listening to Your Money Business Radio, Sirius XM 111. If you want some advice, what to do with your money, want to know how to save it, invest it, buy insurance, get in a will, pay down debts, maybe grandma just left you $1 million, want to know what to do with it, give me a call live on Tuesdays here at 1-844-WHARTON. Just like the school name, WHARTON, that's 1-844-942-7866. Welcome back to the show. Paul Winter is the founder of Five Seasons Financial Plan in Salt Lake City, which he established in 2004. Like all other advisors, he is fee on this show, not all other advisors, but just the ones on this show. He's fee only, and he graduated from Columbia University with an MBA in where his majors were money and financial markets as well as finance. Welcome back to the show, Paul.
Thanks for having me again, Ken.
And again, if you got a question for Paul and myself, again, give us a call here at 1-844-WHARTON. That's 1-844-942-7866. Go back to the phone lines in just a minute here. Before doing that, Paul, just remind us a little bit about your firm. And if you have a typical client, what's he or she like?
Well, as you mentioned, fee only. That's taken for granted since I'm here on your show. So fee only pretty much implies also that we serve as fiduciaries for our clients, which means in a nutshell that by law we are required to put client interests above and beyond our own. I'm a sole practitioner, so chief cook and bottle washer here. I've got clients numbering in the dozens, so about 50 clients totaling about 60-odd million in assets under management. So that should give listeners a rough idea of average portfolio size. Probably a little more geographically dispersed than most sole practitioners because I did spend 12 or 15 years in my early career working on Wall Street. And so I've got a fair number of clients back in the New York, New Jersey area. So about a third of my clients are outside of the state of Utah, actually, and about two-thirds here in Salt Lake, where I've lived since 99. Yeah. But as far as other characteristics of the client base, you know, they run the gamut from double income, earning young professionals in their 40s, all the way up to retirees in their 80s. I really can't say that I have a niche, but there's kind of a bell curve within those ranges. You know, most clients, I would say, are staring retirement in the face in the next few years or have just pulled the plug in the last few years. So I would say sort of baby boomers in their 60, in sort of the age of 60 is about sort of the median client.
Excellent. So again, speaking with Paul Winter, who's the founder of Five Seasons Financial Planning and sole practitioner in Salt Lake City. It says in his bio he also does a lot of skiing and fly fishing, as well as squash. I'm curious how you do squash in Utah. I think that's great. Great rounding of a physical activity there. I'm jealous. Let me go to Bill calling from North Carolina. How can I help you, Bill?
Hi. My mother is 86 years old, and we have three siblings. And she is living basically on my father's Social Security.
Yep.
Or a percentage of that, which is coming in.
Sure.
And then she has a savings account that she has invested with an advisor. I think that's like $60,000 or $80,000.
Okay.
But she's about to sell an investment that she and my father had in a business.
Yep.
And it's going to be just probably over $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
And we're wondering, first off, tax-wise, how to prepare for that. I don't think she's not in a very high tax bracket, and given her age and income. And then, two, how should those funds be brought in, and where should she put them? How should she handle those to protect herself and us as heirs and that type of thing.
Yeah. So the business that's being sold, do you know how it was organized? Was it a C corp, S corp? Do you know?
It was a C corp.
C corp. And do you happen to know what type of equity she has? And this is a very technical question. But if it's something like founder's equity, maybe her husband, well, I'm assuming is deceased at this point.
That's correct.
Did an 83B election. Do you know if it's a long-term, she's going to get long-term or short-term tax treatment on that?
I don't know. I know that when you say founders, I know that the when they purchased the stock, it was at the beginnings of this company.
Yeah.
And it was a very small, not labeled closely held company, but a very small company like that.
Sure. Yeah. So a lot of it's going to come down to when her husband originally bought her his original equity. Did he do what's called an 83B election? Something that a lot of times people just overlook.
I doubt that he did.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a good chance that that's going to be taxed as regular income when the sale takes place, and largely as you know, it's short-term tax treatment, regular income, and a very low cost basis. So most of that is probably subject to tax, and it's just going to be, there's not going to be an earn out. It's just going to be a lump sum. She's going to get $200,000. Is that how it's structured?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. All right. So your second question was about how it should be invested. What's the intent? Is it to make sure it pays for a nursing care? Is it more for intergenerational transfer? What do you think is the intent? Or is it like if she needs it for nursing care, fine. But if she doesn't, more intergenerational.
Yeah, we definitely want it for her if she were to need to do something or we're not wanting it, Yes, it's hers to provide
sure.
for her. So
yeah, and so then in reason I ask that it's sometimes the strategy is a little bit different. Is she living okay on the Social Security right now, or is she dipping into that savings account that she currently has?
She is. Yeah, she's doing fine with what she's getting at the time. I mean, it's very conservative, but she's doing fine. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, so it sounds like she inherited her husband's Social Security payment, and but it sounds like that's enough to cover her kind of basic needs. So the $80,000 that she currently has and the $200,000 would be for things like skilled nurses, some things that come up later on.
Yes.
Okay. So, Paul, your thoughts about, in terms of taxes, that's a little bit harder to avoid, but there might be something creative that you think of, but also in terms of how to invest that money.
Yeah, I assume there must be a tax preparer in the equation at some point. So I think I would preliminarily at least reach out to the tax preparer and get an idea, even if it's just a rough idea, of what the potential tax liability is going to be on the sale of this business.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because I think investment time horizon is a big input into the question as to how to invest the proceeds. So, for example, if the proceeds are going to be $200,000, but the CPA or the tax preparer foresees that there's going to be a tax bill of $50,000 come next April, I would be extremely reluctant to invest that portion of the proceeds or any other portion of the proceeds that might be needed within a two-year time frame to the volatility of the market. So that's kind of my line in the sand, that if a client comes to me and says, I've got this sum to invest, my first question to them is, hey, do you need any of this amount within a two-year time frame? And that it's really an art rather than a science, but that's sort of my guideline. And the reason that's important, that investment time horizon is important, is you don't want to commit money to the volatility of the markets that you know you're going to have to need within 6 months or 12 months or 18 months, because historically, we do have 10 or 20% pullbacks in the stock market, every 3 or 4 years. And the last thing you want to do is have to liquidate investments at fire sale prices to meet liabilities like tax bills that you absolutely have to pay at a given point in time. So I think my first question would be, of this $200,000 in proceeds, is there an amount that you've, you know, this tax preparer foresees needing for a tax bill? Is there an amount that the client or the client's son foresees being needed for health care or nursing home care or something like that? And I would certainly set aside that amount into a savings account or a CD or something that was principal protected, and then the rest can be committed to the markets in a diversified portfolio in accordance with the risk tolerance of the mother.
Yeah. So, Bill, you know, and thanks, Paul. It's great. What I would do is I would really keep this fairly simple in the sense that this money, if in fact her wishes were to intergenerational transfer, then you could potentially get creative. For example, she doesn't actually take the sale of the stock yet. What she does is instead of getting this a payout, it gets essentially held as stock in the new practice. And then if she passes away, that becomes part of her estate. And then you inherit, or your kids, your siblings inherit that stock, and you get free basis step up at death. It wipes out the tax bill. And given that she's 86 years old, I would actually sit down and have that conversation with her and really figure out what she needs to do with that money, what she really wants to do with the money. And if she says, I really want to make sure this goes to you kids, there's a good chance, first of all, that almost all the $200,000 is going to be taxed, minus a very small amount for the purchase of the restricted stock, which is usually at par price, very low. Unlike your father did 83B election. So that's going to be, you know, regular income. So it's not a big income tax bracket, but nonetheless, you could wipe it out with the basis step up with a little creativity. And then, you know, in that scenario, if she does need skilled nursing, then unfortunately, in that case, she goes into Medicaid to pay for skilled nursing after she wipes out that $80,000 in her savings. Her house won't count for the Medicaid test, but the $80,000 will. But if you don't want to go that route, but I'd still have that conversation with her, but if you don't want to go that route and you want to sell, what I'll do is I'll just keep it simple. There's a good chance at 86, she could need that money in just the next few years. Personally, what I would do with that is just put an online bank account, just something very low, get a little bit higher interest rate, 1.2%, something like that, with that $200,000. As Paul points out, you're going to have to pay a tax bill, could be around $50,000, just rounding here. And then you definitely want to have the money for that. But the rest of the money, I would just keep it super simple. If the goal is to make sure that she can get some type of skilled nursing in a quality way and not have to use the Medicaid system, I don't think there's a lot of advantage of doing anything else creative with that, because she could need that really any time if that's the main objective. Is that helpful, Bill?
It is. It is. Is there any thought about, like, gifting? Would that protect it at all?
No, it wouldn't. No, it wouldn't. In particular, she gifts that stock. I mean, assuming there was no laws that are broken, that gift would actually be at the $200,000. So in other words, she can't gift at the original par price of that stock, because otherwise people would be doing that all the time. It has to be at the fair market value is what would be assessed, and then the gift rule would kick in, because that's way more than the allowable amount that she can give to each of the kids, $14,000 a year. So what would happen, she could use some other types of lifetime estate planning and so forth. But the real option here would be is that something creative and happen to sell so that the stock is not realized. There's no realization of the stock. That's what's actually going to happen, and why you're getting taxed here is that there's a realization of the stock sale. If without 83B election, it means that it's going to be short-term tax treatment, just like regular income. But if you can postpone the realization of the stock sale and then the kids inherit that stock, then that's where the basis step up comes in. But again, Medicaid becomes the backup option. I'd really be checking what the Medicaid facilities look like in your area. That may not be a very good backup option. So in that case, you know, I would say if you get the cash, Or the buyers just don't want to go along with this. They just don't agree to this. They want to have a clean cap sheet. They don't want to have any type of complication. Then in that case, you know, cap table. Then in that case, I would just hold it in an online bank account. I mean, I wouldn't even put it into a bond fund because she's 86. Who knows? She may need this money in a matter of just a few months from now. You just don't know. And just foregoing a little interest, I mean, beyond a 1.2%, it's just not worth it, in my opinion. So thanks so much for calling, Bill. Really appreciate it. And again, speaking with Paul Winter, founder of Five Seasons Financial Planning, Salt Lake City, doing a great job answering your question here at 1-844-WHARTON. That's 1-844-942-7866. And let me go to Alex calling from North Carolina. How can we help you, Alex?
Hey there. Kind of have a similar question, actually, to the one y'all were just talking about.
Yeah.
My mother passed away recently, and my parents didn't really have a lot of savings, haven't really ever been good at that, but she did have a small, life insurance policy for my stepdad. It's about $250K, so nothing fancy, just a small basic life insurance policy that he's going to be able to get.
Yeah.
And since they have no savings, I've been trying to figure out what to do with it. And he's about 70. He's already drawing Social Security, makes an okay income, but I'm expecting that's probably not going to be super into the long-term future, maybe just a couple more years.
Okay.
And he doesn't really have any savings in his 401k, just to kind of paint the picture.
Wow. Okay.
And so I've been wrestling with, do we need to think about an annuity because, it's such a small amount. Do you want to risk it in the market? Or if I did invest it, to me, it would need to be pretty conservative because the last thing I'd want to do is have that, get taken away. But by the time you look at the basis points and like the going rate for, managing it, if you make even just a 5% return, it's eaten up with, the fees and inflation and taxes and stuff. And so I just wanted to see maybe what y'all would advise on that.
Yeah, and do keep in mind, it's a really important distinction. Economists really try to emphasize this a lot. It's not about really time horizon and that allows you to take on more risk. Economists really don't believe that time offers diversification. Paul Samuelson and Bob Merton and others, all Nobel Prize winners in both in economics, it kind of shown that's not true. What it really is younger people who have lots of human capital ahead of them. That's a bond-like asset, and that's the reason why they can take on more risk with their liquid assets is because it's essentially they have too much bonds. They'd like to take on more stocks. They really can't borrow against their future income, but so the little money they have, that's why they take on more stocks. So in your mother's case, or your stepdad's case, age 70, it sounds like his human capital is pretty dwindling. It sounds like he's already claiming Social Security, which I assume, therefore, he claimed well before age 70. Is that right?
He did. So he took kind of like the penalty cut.
But
they've since reimbursed a little bit back. I guess they've maybe withheld it or something.
No,
it's about maybe $2,300 a month. Yeah.
Yeah. He's getting $2,300 a month. Yeah. What happened is since he's working, a lot of people don't realize this, that the earnings tax, and even well-meaning advisors make this mistake, the earnings tax that he gets hit on with the little income that he's making that you mentioned, but a lot of people don't realize is that actually they say, well, that's a big earnings tax. So you lose that money if you're working and claiming Social Security. They don't really realize that what happens is that you get that earning tax back later on. They do a benefit recalculation for those Social Security later on to give you kind of essentially that money back. So that's what happened in that case. It's not going to be from anything about claiming early. And so you said he basically gets $2,300 a month. That's nice. That's inflation adjusted. Do you know what his expenses are?
Yeah.
Per month?
Luckily, with kind of where they were at, a lot of the debt and stuff was pretty much her name. And in North Carolina, it's like not the joint property state. So
yep.
I think he's probably immune from a lot of that. It sounds like. I think his basic expenses probably looking at maybe $900 to $1,000 for rent somewhere.
Yeah.
And then some small utilities. So he probably brings in maybe like $6,000 right now in terms of his job and
$6,000 a year or a month?
Oh, sorry, a month. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's gonna last for how long?
I'm in a wager, maybe, you know, just another handful of years, probably like five or so.
Okay.
You know, he's a lively guy, but I mean, I don't know if it's going to, you know, if he'll be able to work for like another 10, 15, obviously.
Yeah.
And so I think by the time you look at the Social Security, he could probably keep the expenses to like, I mean, maybe 13, 14. Doesn't have a car payment or anything. So
yep.
That's.
Okay. So it sounds like he could live on that Social Security benefit, kind of worst case scenario. So this money, it sounds like from this payout, he could maybe use it for out-of-pocket medical that's not being covered by Medicare. Do you know what type of Medicare plan he's on? Does he have a Medigap policy right now? Does he have Medicare Advantage? Do you know?
That's a good question. I know that he does have his insurance through work. So I'm assuming, what is that, like Medicare Advantage or?
Well, it depends. But do you know when he retires, will work continue to pay for healthcare in retirement?
Or does that... No, they will not.
Okay.
Will not.
All right. Because some of the older people, their power unions and other, there used to be retiree health plans beyond just pension plans. Okay. So I understand that. And so, so he's actually getting some healthcare in complement of Medicare through his work. But after that point, it's either, some out-of-pocket expenses potentially for healthcare. Is that what you think is the primary goal for that money, is the kind of healthcare, or given that it looks like Social Security can cover its monthly expenses, what's your primary goal? Is it healthcare stuff?
Yeah, so that's a good question, and maybe that's what I was looking for advice on. I guess what I thought about for the money is, like, when I look at the traditional person who, you know, if you think about the average American his age, probably if they're lucky enough to have a pension and a 401k, so they've got this annuity structure from the pension, and they've got their 401k to keep, like, earning interest for them and kind of live off of that. And so since he doesn't have, like, an income stream, I guess I was trying to wonder, does he actually need to try to supplement that Social Security through this $250K?
Like, Yeah. No, that's a good question. So, Paul, this is what really comes down to. I mean, in my mind, I mean, what should he be doing with this $250,000 he gets? Social Security, it sounds like it's been enough to cover his expenses. He's only going to be working for a little bit longer, hopefully saving a lot of that money. But the question that Alex had was, you know, I'm assuming he's not going to be talking about a variable annuity, but a fixed annuity that will continue to pay while the father is alive until he dies. So a true fixed annuity, good old-fashioned type of a fixed annuity that no one really buys anymore except a handful of people. Acts like Social Security, except it's not going to have the inflation adjustment that Social Security has. But should they invest that money in, or do some, it sounds like some of that money could potentially be used for out-of-pocket medical as well. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it is a fairly similar question to the last caller, in that, as you mentioned, sort of investment time horizon is a big input into the decision. And again, you know, expenses, medical related expenses or any other expenses that are, foreseen to be in the shorter term within 2 years, I think has to be set aside in something fairly liquid, in principle protected, an online savings account, something like that. Anything beyond that, especially since this gentleman seems to be able to live fairly frugally, his living expenses. If his living expenses are less than his Social Security, and as you say, his Social Security may increase once the earnings test goes away, then I think, you're talking about investment for the intermediate to long term. Even though he is 70, he could easily live for another couple of decades, in which case inflation, as the caller mentioned, becomes a concern. We've been spoiled over the last decade or two with very benign inflation, but even if it goes up to historical 3% levels, that starts to erode purchasing power. And so I think you do have to start to look at a stock component as part of that investment of that life insurance payout. So I would sort of carve out what you need within 2 years for medical expenses or any a new car or anything like that, put that in something principal protected. Beyond that, I think you could start to look at a diversified portfolio, not necessarily because it's going to be needed for his retirement, but in effect he may be looking at it as a as an investment for his beneficiaries.
Yeah, and in particular, Alex, and I agree that this really becomes a question of who is he investing for. If he's investing for you guys, and that's a primary concern from him, then it's really your human capital that kind of matters in this calculation. And that does mean, you know, taking on more risk. If it's really for him, you don't want him, you know, relying on using his Social Security payments to do out-of-pocket medical expenses. You don't want him necessarily being in a Medicaid nursing facility. And so you want that money kind of available for that type of stuff. So what I usually say is, you know, the kind of the best rule beyond Social Security, it kind of provides that base layer. We really want some cash. And the average couple going into retirement today is going to be paying about $250,000. Now, its newest number, $260,000. And out-of-pocket medical expenses, that it's either Medigap premiums or things that are not covered by Medicare. And then, you know, you got skilled nursing on top of that. And so having a good $250,000 in kind of a cash or a bond, like fund, is in fact one possibility. So I think beyond Social Security, it's really kind of how I would prioritize this. If for me would be, you know, beyond Social Security, what I would be doing with that $250,000, I would actually be thinking about getting a TIPS bond fund. So TIPS is Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, and they don't pay a high return net of inflation. But the key about it, in fact, you know, it used to be even slightly negative just to get an inflation hedge. Now that's not true anymore. But Vanguard, for example, has a TIPS fund, and so what the idea there is that here's a bond fund, doesn't pay a bunch of money, but it's at least keeping pace with inflation over time, because investing in government securities, that the part of the payout is actually based on inflation. If you're really creative, you could actually do what's called a TIPS ladder. That's too complicated for this amount. And think about that as a safe fund that is mainly useful for things like out-of-pocket medical expenses, something like that. Is it guaranteed? No, it's because, you know, it could be the case that, you know, when it goes to sell, there could be a principal revaluation of it and it goes down in value. I think it's fairly low risk. And the bigger risk, as Paul pointed out, is inflation. And so I actually think the TIPS fund would be kind of my first bet here. And then, but if you're not comfortable with that, yes, the fixed annuity. Sometimes these have fairly high costs associated with them, but that's not always the case. You can buy fixed annuities that have some low overriding costs. And I'm trying to remember, tip of my tongue, I'll try to remember that and give it by the end of the show. Who is it? She's been on the show before. She has a firm that offers fixed annuities at lower overhead costs. But nonetheless, in the fixed annuity, then would complement Social Security. The reason I don't think that's that important, though, right now is simply because, quite frankly, he can live on his Social Security. This really is about large out-of-pocket expenses associated with healthcare. And so I don't think he needs to complement his Social Security so much. And so I personally would be looking at the TIPS fund as a primary mechanism, and then maybe having some cash or some, you know, minor things on the side. But the TIPS fund would be my first approach, simply because, as Paul points out, inflation is the bigger risk, and a fixed annuity, it won't keep up with inflation, whereas Social Security and the TIPS fund will. Is that helpful, Alex?
Yeah, no, that's super helpful, and I think I'm like totally with you. I don't need the money. I'm luckily in a position for that, so it's all about what his like long-term advantage is going to be from it. I hadn't thought about the TIPS option with Vanguard, so that's really good. So I'm going to look into that, and then I think the other piece that I'm getting an appreciation from is that small carve-out. Maybe it's 25, maybe it's 50, whatever, from the money that he can use as like a quick liquid piece. So that's really good.
That's
good
right. Yeah, that's right. I always like to have a small carve out just for, you know, pipes burst, you know, new house roof and things like that. So thanks so much for calling. And let me go to Richard calling from California. How can I help you, Richard?
Hello there. How's it going?
Great.
So I've been blessed in terms of paying my goals to be paid off and everything is done in my
good
whole life, except my house. And right now,
that's a very big.
Should I pay the sucker off?
Yeah, that's a very big butt in California we're talking about here. it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I've had a pretty clean record except for that, you know, that one murder, you know. So I'm teasing Richard. So tell me more about your house. You know, how much do you owe in the house? What's the interest rate?
I owe only like a half a million on it.
Whoa!
It's worth $1 million. Yeah, I still owe a half a million. Yeah, I know. But it took me a long time to pay off the other stuff.
You know, I was just gonna, I'm just going to say that's good for California. That's fantastic. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. What interest rate?
I'm paying 4%. Right
4%
now.
Fixed, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, fixed.
Yep.
Fixed for like the next 30 years.
Okay.
So I'm sitting there. Now I have an extra $2,300, maybe sometimes $3,000 a month.
Uh-huh.
Just to stash away, or do I make a triple payment to the mortgage?
Yeah.
So I've been told, don't pay off your loan. You get no tax, nothing. I'm like, okay. So I'm asking you.
It is true. Having some as a risk-free return, 4%, even if you get to have some interest deductibility there, it sounds like you've refinanced if you still have 30 years left. So there's some value there, but even three quarters, you know, that's still very high on a risk-free basis. Let me ask you, what do you have going on for retirement? Are you kind of set there? You said you paid off everything else. How old are you? How much you've saved up for retirement?
I'm a little bit over 50,
yep.
And I've got. I wish I did it a long time ago. I'm too busy doing other stuff.
Sure.
Like paying off.
But we only have a couple minutes left in the segment. How much you got?
Okay. I got how much I got extra money?
No, save for
how
retirement.
Much, like stashed away.
Yeah.
I think like right now I got like 50,000, 60,000.
60,000. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So in terms of, and that is going to be your primary goal. You got your other debts paid off, but it's really your primary goal is saving up for retirement. Do you have a job where you got a W-2, things like that?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
W-2.
And what's your household income?
It's around 200.
200,000. Okay. So, Paul, not to call this too short, but it does seem to me, I forgot to ask you, Richard, are you making $18,000? Well, now you can actually, you're age 50. Are you doing $24,000, $500 a year? Are you maxing out your contributions?
Yes, I am.
So you're actually doing, not just to get the employer match, you're actually doing the $24,500 a year contribution.
Yes, I am. I'm maxing out the contribution.
Okay. All right. And is your spouse work as well?
No.
Okay. So, Paul, we only got a minute left in this segment. So tell me, should he gets his extra cash flow? He's already maxing out his 401k. What do you think he should do with it? Kind of get a 3.5, call it something, a risk-free return? Or should he open up a taxable brokerage?
A little of both would be my answer.
Yeah.
I think I would definitely, you know, depending on his tax situation, and to keep this, you know, fairly short, maybe the possibility of a tax deductible spousal IRA, possibility of an HSA contribution if he's got a high deductible health care plan. Those are both ways to shelter income from taxation. So I think those are probably high on my list. And then, but I like the idea of the you know, the automatic 4% guaranteed return of mortgage prepayments as well. So I think I'd probably be inclined to do a little bit of both, a little bit of debt repayment, and hopefully a little bit of tax deductible investment for retirement.
Fantastic. And I completely agree with you. Richard, explore some other tax deferred options like a spousal IRA. If your firm offers a high deductible health savings plan, you can complement that with a HSA. And after that, I agree. Getting a risk-free return, paying down your debt is going to be a great idea. Thanks so much for calling, Paul. Fantastic job for coming on the show. You can find out more about Paul by going to his website, fiveseasonsfinancialplanning.com. Again, fiveseasonsfinancialplanning.com. I'll see you next Tuesday, 5 p.m. Eastern.
For more guest interviews, check out our Wharton Business Radio Highlights podcast on iTunes and Google Play.